going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
This is not me, y'all. I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this. I gave y'all 30 years of my career. 30 years of my career. Y'all trying to kill me.
It is the interview heard around the world. R&B singer R. Kelly denying allegations against him of sexually abusing underage girls in an explosive interview. It is just one of the issues we're covering tonight at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are Misha Green with the Afro-American Newspaper and Dr. Cleo Monago, who's a political analyst. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Now, before we get to the R. Kelly stuff, I want to talk about, first, a story that really kind of bubbled up yesterday. And this is a story about a black man in Boulder, Colorado, who was detained by first one and then eventually eight Boulder, Colorado police officers because he was collecting trash in front of his home. You're about to hear audio that was taken by a neighbor. In the background, the man can be heard arguing with police, but you can also hear the neighbor describing and talking to the police as this happened.
He's got a gun. He's got a gun. What do you mean? This is my property. This is my house. I live here.
We live here. He's picking up garbage.
Get out and drop it. I'm on duty doing my work and my job. And this officer comes over here. I open my stuff.
This is gross, dude.
Misha, your thoughts about this?
I mean, it's unfortunately another example of caught while being black. This guy was simply doing his job. It seems like he worked on the property and was simply picking up trash, and the police stopped him because there was a sign that said private property, which is just absurd. I mean, black people can't live in private property. Obviously, that's what that officer assumed. And the fact that it got to the point where not only he pursued him, but other officers, it's just egregious. This guy was not doing anything wrong. And obviously, he was only combative because he was so incredibly offended. And anyone can understand that. And so, like I said, this is another example of just caught being black. It's a real thing that people deal with every day.
Well, I'll reiterate what I say before. We should be very grateful for these, because
these meaning
I'm sorry, we're not we're
this isn't
you can't
television.
See me.
Yeah, it's radio.
Pardon me for it.
We know you're used to that.
Let me hold up the phone so I can get so cell phone can see video it. Of what you're holding up, or else nobody's going to believe
I'm
you.
I'm sorry, audience. What I just held up was the cell phone, which has video phone capacity. And we should be very grateful for that, because if it wasn't for that, we would not hear about this cliche. This is a cliche. This is not brand new. But one of the things I want to raise that rarely comes up is the impact of this on the black psyche and on black people, particularly on black men. There was some reference in the previous segment about domestic violence. That's not the topic, so I won't go further into it, except that to say that there's a lot of misdirected rage that we live with because of these kind of pressures that we're just starting to kind of talk about as a part of the landscape. We heard about Rodney King because of videotape back then, but we're not looking at the psychosocial effect on black men. A lot of the acting out, which includes violence toward each other, violence towards women, what's called domestic violence, is misdirected rage based on a conversation that's yet to be had among black people about the impact of unresolved trauma resulting from this kind of daily treatment, being followed around at the store, being followed around everywhere, constantly being harassed by cops. And I'll close with this. Not everybody always has their phone. There are people who are being killed under these circumstances, and we never even hear about it. I do a lot of work in local communities across the country. And there's local stories about the killing of a black man or local families who didn't get no coverage talking about the killing of a black family member that we never even hear about. This is an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things that also happened today, and this is very, very similar, and this was the Stand Your Ground case that fell by the wayside in Florida, where you had a police officer. He was a former Palm Beach Gardens officer, Newman Raja, who was convicted of manslaughter, killing a black man who was at his broken down SUV, had called for roadside service. And the thing that convicted Raja today, because he was saying that he identified himself as a police officer, even though he was in plain clothes. But what was found out during the course of the trial was that this young man, Corey Jones, who was a musician, was on the phone with the company for roadside assistance when you could hear that that officer did not identify himself. And so here we are, you know, another one of those situations where you have a police officer who kills, you know, a black man. This obviously didn't happen in Boulder, Colorado. But to your point, it remains a very scary time.
For sure. And also to your point, luckily we had a cell phone in that situation. Luckily he was able to make that call and that call was recorded, and that was what ended up indicting that officer. And I think that's really important. Obviously I'm not out here saying, guys, make sure you have the latest cell phone so that you can be protected. But I am saying that people out there, make sure you are arming yourselves with the things that can help. And a cell phone is one of those. Voice memos are a real thing. I mean, we saw with Philando Castile, obviously that was after he was unfortunately killed, but his girlfriend recording that, again, was another sign to the world that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness we have the phones.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about tonight. And of course, you can certainly comment or raise a question about any of the topics that we have discussed tonight. But one of the things that I do want to move on to, because this really was one hell of a Black History Month.
Oh.
We've just, you know, we had here, and I don't see any other way to put it. You have, you know, white people using the N-word more than a mumble rapper.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like this case in Hyattsville, Joy Morrow, she was a principal of a private school, the New Hope Academy. She apologized for using the N-word while talking about Black History Month. And I am astonished. Clutch the pearls when you've got so many, you know, white people using the N-word or doing things that are just untoward and obtuse when it comes to trying to explain back Black History Month.
Well, I mean, right. The first issue in there is that Joy Morrow was even explaining Black History Month as a white woman. Now, obviously, the story is that she's the principal of the school and the keynote speaker canceled at the last minute. But where were all the people, the black people in the building, when Principal Morrow raised her hand and said she'd take over doing a speech that she'd done 25 years ago? And so already it's outdated. These kids have a very different experience and something that she created about how Dr. King had an impact on her life, which is what the speech was supposed to be about. And her defense was that she simply she prefaced the conversation saying that she was going to use the word in order to explain the racism that she experienced living, I believe, in Iowa as a young person. But obviously, if you have to preface it, I used to teach, and I always used to tell my students, if you're going to say not to be mean, but you're about to be mean. So when she said not to be racist, but she was going to be racist. And, you know, I just don't think an apology is enough in a situation like this. It's condoning using such a harmful word, specifically because the school is a school that is supposed to embrace diversity. And, you know, you have your principal saying things like that, how the kids feel safe there.
Well, I have a potentially controversial perspective on this.
No.
and I don't intend to be, but what's her name? What was the principal's name?
Joy Morrow.
Joy yes. Morrow probably hears the N-word every day. Probably walks down the hallways and hear it every day. It's a very popular song out now called I Don't Got Time for You N-Words.
Yes.
And when the young people say it, they don't beep themselves. They say the N-word. So part of my point is that I'm offended and anybody says it. I'm equally offended when black people say it because it's a white supremacist, black, dehumanizing word that is not constructive to us at all. And it's an insult that we have normalized. And so we live in a society where the word is alive and well and omnipresent. And I think it's hard sometimes for white people not to break out in their racism or whatever you want to call it because the word is part of the landscape. You probably heard it on the way to the assembly. So they have to do this dance and have to pretend they're not thinking it and saying it when they are. And we don't pretend that it's that we say it. We just say it, and it's just a horrible word that has had no constructive impact on the black psyche. I work in psychology and behavioral health, and part of one of the reasons why we deal with so many struggles is because we debase ourselves unconsciously and constantly as a norm, and it gets in the way of our functioning and the capacity to be black affirming and healthy and even defend ourselves.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. We've got this cleaning up wild black situation in Boulder, Colorado. We have the N-word used by a private school principal in Hyattsville. Of course, we're going to get to the R. Kelly situation, and we're going to talk about Ward 2 D.C. Council member Jack Evans. What is going on with that? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we go to a break, I did want to say this, Dr. Monago, that I don't think that when you, just because, you know, white people hear the N-word being used in popular culture, or hearing it in popular music. I remember someone said to me many, many years ago, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think that there may be times when, you know, black people may hear terms in reference to, you know, other ethnic groups, and I don't know whether or not they use them, but I think at some point in 2019, it's a teachable moment. It is a moment where we need to, depending on, of course, who happens to be there and who says it, that we need to say, it must stop. You know, it really must stop.
And someone has to be reprimanded for it.
Yeah, without
including
a doubt.
Us.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what I mean.
That's exactly what I mean. Absolutely.
We're going to be back in a moment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141. Your phone calls are next. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are Misha Green with the Afro-American Newspapers and Dr. Cleo Monago. He's a political analyst. Stay with us. The lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let us talk to Tia calling from Waldorf. Tia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to speak to Dr.
Monago.
Monago,
before you mess it up.
What up? Yeah, before I mess it up, Doctor, let me say something to you. Why is it that black men, I don't understand this. Why are you trying to change the narrative? The principal was racist in using the N-word.
Yes.
And you're supporting her? Why?
No. Well, I never articulated any support for her at all. What I said was we should all not say it. I never supported her, and I don't agree with what she did, and I believe she should have been reprimanded as she was, and more than that. So let's not please interpret me as supporting her, because I didn't say that.
Oh, yeah, you said we should show her some type of a sympathy. Why? Why would we show?
No.
I think you listened to another channel before you called in.
No, he definitely didn't say that to you.
No.
Definitely, he did.
What he said. He sounded like I'm supporting the principal, and she hears it all day, so therefore she has.
Oh, I see what you're. Yeah, but I don't think that's sympathizing. Which goes back to the point that I made right before the break. I said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And Dr. Monago agreed with me there.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I don't believe that he was sympathizing at all.
I mean, I think, I was afraid where Dr. Monago was going in the beginning, but he is, works as a psychologist. And I hear your rage, Tia, because I was feeling that at first. However, I think where really was coming from is as someone who works sort of in the field he does, is that it's about reframing. That's something that I've learned
about not re-traumatizing ourselves.
Yes, right.
Because we re-traumatize ourselves and we traumatize each other all the time inadvertently. And trust me, it has horrible impact.
Right. And of course, like your statement is that for many years, people have said, well, black people use the N-word as a way, again, of reframing what it is, and now it's empowering. But I think at the end of the day, your point is that it's a word that it was always used to debase us, and continuing to use it is only reaffirming that, as opposed to, doing what they were doing in the 90s and sort of coming back. Why aren't we saying, I don't got time for you kings today, right? Sometimes kings do the most, right?
And let's be clear.
And that's the problem.
There was a time, I look much younger than I am, thank goodness. But there was a time where we referred to each other normally as, what's up, brother?
Yes.
What's up, sister? What's up, cuz? Which meant cousin, in short. And we have divorced ourselves from that and still use the N-word. And it's not, that's a whole other show, but it's not by accident. There are things that have been done strategically to keep that word in place, because a lot of us don't want to call ourselves sister and brother around white people because we don't want to make them uncomfortable. Well, we're willing to re-traumatize ourselves because we have an epidemic of unresolved, unaddressed, internalized anti-black oppression that we live with that we call culture. When it's really dysfunction, that's a whole other show. I won't get any more into that.
But you got a lot of shows.
But I want to say to that sister. No, I did not support the principle at all. I was saying that it's not good for none of us to use the word.
Okay, Tia, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tammy calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Tammy. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to say, we use that word different.
No, we don't. And let me cut you off and get mad. Let me tell you, let me be 100% clear, okay? My friends, my boys, my buddies, we do not address each other like that. Nor do I allow anyone to address me like that. And let me be really, really clear. Whether it's the N-word or the B-word that women use, again, I think it is wholly inappropriate.
Yes.
And it's okay. So I said it. You were going to say, Tammy?
You're not
not going to get by with it at all.
No.
It's like I'm not going to get by with redneck or...
And you shouldn't.
My name.
You shouldn't.
Okay. And that's different. You know? Both redneck and the N-word came from white supremacy, came from a white source. It did not come from us. For example, real quickly, in South Africa, there's a word called kafir,
right,
which means the exact same thing, has the exact same genesis as the N-word. But they don't use that word on themselves because they have other languages. They know where they came from. They recognize an insult. But when you've had an insult forcing you for 300 years, you forget that you've been insulted, so you normalize it. And it still has a negative impact on your behavior and how your communities turn out. And it is disrupting black families, black relationships. There's all kinds of damage being done because of that debasing word that we've normalized. And we even to this day, when we get mad at somebody, we'll say that N-word. I'm talking about black people now. Sometimes when sisters are mad at a brother, they don't even mess with the other words. They say that N-word. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to insult. That's the intention. And we have to recognize an insult when we hear it so we can stop debasing each other. It's a problem.
Yeah, and I just believe that we need to do better.
Yeah, I mean, and I think in general, again, it brings me back to the point of it's much better if we can find a word that just empowers us every time, right? Because if you think you're using it differently, then find the word that truly is something that brings somebody up, that makes them feel better about themselves. And that word just, I mean, it cannot.
Yeah. No other group. There's kike, there's chink, there's beaner. There's all kinds of disgusting words. Nobody else uses those other words as a norm and puts them in their love songs that come on their radio stations every day but us, because we were enslaved for almost 300 years. And it's been embedded in our psyche. And again, I'm going to stop because I can go on.
And I think that's a really, really fine point, that you don't hear racial slurs in the love songs or the popular songs of other cultures. And I think the closest that you may get to it, and my Spanish is really bad, so I can't talk about Spanish, for example, but when you talk about country western songs, yes, you may hear the term redneck, okay? But I think that's about as far as you're going to go when you hear country western songs.
And that's different. That's a working class comment based on economics and a whole nother context. And plus, again, they are setting the narrative. When we call ourselves the N-word, we're taking their narrative.
Right. Yeah.
We're taking a debasing narrative. It's not ours. Some people say, well, we're taking it back. You can't take back what's not yours.
Yeah. Yeah. My perfect example that I use for this argument is in the same way that they gave us the N-word, they gave us chitlins. And neither are good for us.
Yeah, well, there you go. Not even with hot sauce. Tammy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jay, calling from Forestville. What's on your mind, Jay? Jay, are you there? Give me a call back if you want. I need to go to Mr. Robert Kelly. Okay.
Robert.
Yeah, the incredible, emotional, explosive interview that Gail King and CBS This Morning have been milking for all it's worth this week.
Oh yeah,
and it is truly amazing. And it has only taken 24 hours for the memes to come out about R. Kelly. And once again, I will say the internet is undefeated.
Oh, yes.
But Doc, I'll ask you first. What were your thoughts about and not just that interview, but the interviews with the parents of Joycelyn Savage, as well as both Joycelyn Savage and Azriel Clary speaking out, the women that live with R. Kelly?
Well, starting off with the women, they said at the end of the interview, when it was asked, well, what do you do? And they said, nothing. I don't know if everybody remember that. And they said, he takes care of us.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. They're bought and paid for and manipulated and doing what the manipulator says to do. And that's what they did. They gave themselves away when that brilliant question was asked, what do you do? And we don't do nothing but serve R. Kelly and we get paid for it. So that's pretty tragic. I didn't watch the interview. Of course, I heard about it because I live on planet Earth and I have the internet. I heard about the, I couldn't torture myself and sit through a dismantling of a troubled black man with issues voluntarily. I had to be forced to do that. But this is really simple. Robert Kelly has personal problems. He has mental illness problems. He has unresolved issues. I think he's also been molested and he's acting out his own issues, and he's also been rich and spoiled and enabled and able to do what he wants to do and never ever work on his issues, and now it's exploded and there's all of these casualties and now we're hearing about it. It's really that simple. And his meltdown, unfortunately, he must have a really bad attorney, because I wouldn't have put my client on air to be interviewed like that. That's a sign of desperation, and it's just very dysfunctional and unfortunate, because it's pathology on steroids. I just hope that black parents who are allowing their children to witness this are giving them a chance to debrief and talk about the impact of this experience on them. Because, like I said earlier, we're sitting on things, and not providing opportunity to voice them is causing repression, and we act out. And we create the context to develop the likes of a R. Kelly or similar. And we need to debrief those kind of things and deflect that as a possibility, because the risk is there.
Misha.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right on that. My only sort of pause on the argument and talking about his mental health, et cetera, is that I've heard a lot of people argue, well, he just needs help. That doesn't mean that he needs to go to jail.
Oh, I didn't
say that. And I know you didn't say that, but I just want to make that clear, that that part of the argument is absolutely absurd, particularly because there are tons of black men right now incarcerated who have been molested. There are tons, if not the majority of black men who are currently incarcerated, who have mental health issues. And they are suffering right now in a justice system that is not really for them by any means. And that's clear. However, they are paying the time for the crime in which they committed. And R. Kelly's been getting away with this for too long. One thing that I thought was really interesting about this is, you know, I never believed him during the interview from what I saw with Gail. But one thing that I thought was very interesting and was truly a point in which I saw he's lying completely, and he had definitely has done this to women, is because of how incredibly nervous and anxious he got when a woman was simply asking him a question, challenging him, absolutely.
Well, it wasn't just a woman. It was a black woman.
It was exactly a black woman, and that he could disrespect like that, though, and start yelling and cursing and, you know, sort of being combative with her and saying, I hope the camera is on and things like that. I mean, I think that shows that that is the Robert that kirked off when, you know, his girlfriend interrogated him about the 14-year-old in the videotape. That is the same Robert who gets mad when these young women are talking on the phone with their parents. And you know, these girls, yes, they are now adults, but they are babies, and it's really unfortunate to see them brainwashed, because that is what's happening. And you're right. As soon as they said, "Well, he takes care of us," you know, I thought about my puppies at home. You know, they will do anything for me, even after I yell at them and give them a little pow-pow, because I walk them and I feed them.
I want to be clear about something real quickly, though. I want to be clear that even if and since R. Kelly has mental health issues, his victims need to be protected.
Absolutely.
And his potential victims need to be defended and protected, and he needs to be put in a position where he has to stop. If that includes jail, which likely it will, that's appropriate. So I want to make that clear. When I say someone has a mental health issue, I'm certainly not saying, okay, then let them free.
No.
These people are risky people and are a danger to society, a danger to women, and that danger needs to cease.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm just very anxious to get those girls help, because they need it. They really do.
Well, she has lots of fans now. Beyond those women.
I know.
They were sending him letters and cards and trying to bail
him out.
Getting him out.
Yeah, they're like the hairdresser who got him out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in the wrong business.
Well, allegedly, I don't know if this is true, but it was something about using her daughter's money from a wrongful death case situation. So.
And I have some thoughts about the things that both of you shared, and I'll share that on the other side of this break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue at the Reporters Roundtable looking at some of the top stories of the week. I wanted to speak again about this whole, you know, R. Kelly thing, because for some people it may seem very, very straightforward. I think it's very complex. But with that said, first and foremost, the yelling at Gayle King, and I think there is, while I'm not excusing it, if you have been a sex symbol and people love your music and people have enabled you because you were wealthy and a star and used to women falling all over you, I would argue that it is very, very difficult, unless you are a mature person, which I don't believe R. Kelly is, to respect a Gayle King or any kind of woman, and just based on these allegations. And I think that's the first thing. One of the things that you said, Misha, when you were piggybacking off of something that Dr. Monago said, was that you have all of these black men, you know, in prison who have mental health issues, and our system is not equipped to help them. We also have a lot of black men in prison that have molested little girls.
Yeah.
And do they need help? Absolutely. But they also belong in prison. And I think that because they are a danger to society. And I think that, yes, you can get help. And can you be rehabilitated? That's a question for the likes of, you know, Dr. Monago and others. But while you're going through that process, you definitely do need, you need to be away from society.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, you know, in the case of the two women that, you know, that live with him, let us say for the sake of argument that he met them when they were adults. Okay, well, go ahead and do what you do. But the allegation is that he was dealing with these two women when they were underage and vulnerable and what have you. And as a result, and as was suggested, that it, if indeed he, sexually abused or molested or seduced or groomed them when they were underage, then they did need help. And I think my final point is, and this is not about blaming parents. This is about informing parents. As a father of a beautiful 20-year-old young woman, she's still a baby. She's still my sweetie. But, you know, I think that parents need to look at, you know, every boy that comes around, if you've got a girl with a jaundiced eye, and it's almost like that video that you see on social media where, you know, what is it, Will Smith, and somebody else comes up to the door and the boy comes in, and the first thing is, who you? Scare him to death. And, you know, yeah, you're picking her up at 9. I want her back at 9:16. You know, and I think that we just really need to protect our girls and teach them what to expect from boys and men.
And we need to teach them the last part of what you said was one of the things I wanted to elaborate on before you said it, and I'm glad you said it. We have to give our children protection literacy.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Is that your term?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
I like
we're
that.
We're stealing it.
Protection literacy.
No, we do.
And, I like that.
And not just the girls, the boys, too.
Yes.
Because some of those boys who are molesting were molested.
Yes.
we have to, particularly at this late date with the Me Too move and all these issues circling around the issue of sexual violence, we have to stop being at being passive parents or happenstance parents. We have to be active parents and teach our children how to take advantage of their intelligence instead of not talking about sex until they get a certain age, until they start bleeding, and then you kind of hand them the tools and then say, now use it, and they're still ignorant about everything. That's a norm. I'm telling you, I counsel families where children become adults and never had a conversation at all. I'm talking about black people now, mm-hmm. about sexuality. They discover it by chance or by molestation, which they don't have the tools to actually defy the molestation because their parents didn't give them the tools. So it's not even just about looking the boy up and down. You got to teach your child to look the boy up and down.
Yeah. Well, last time I was on, so for those who listened before, sorry for repeating the story, but we were talking about Justin Fairfax and this mm-hmm. whole issue of consent. And I think that, again, and I love your term about protection literacy, because really at the end of the day, kids need to know from a very young age that whoever is touching them, they have to give permission to. And so the story was is that this young little girl, she's probably like 3 years old, was at a pediatrician, and a mom was embarrassed because when the pediatrician went to touch the little girl's face, you know, like a pediatrician does, she said, I didn't give you permission to touch me.
I heard that.
And, the doctor was totally understanding. The mom was, of course, beet red initially, but she said her daughter taught her a lesson, which is you have to be clear from the very beginning what you want to happen with your body. We don't know how to do that. And, particularly, unfortunately, I think as women, we're taught to, make other people comfortable. No. You have to learn how to be comfortable and stand up for yourself from a young age. And I'm, I'm really shouting out those parents that are teaching that. And I think we need to continue that.
Let me go quickly to the phone lines. Anthony calling from Maryland. What's on your mind? Anthony, are you there? Guess you can give us a call back in the few minutes that we have left. Ward 2 council member on the D.C. Council, Jack Evans, in some political trouble, maybe even legal trouble. He is being investigated. He has been sanctioned by the council for allegations of ethics violations. And he's also being investigated by a federal grand jury, the WMATA board, the board that manages Metro in the D.C. area is also looking into an ethics violation. Give me a little ethics 101. Misha, what's he accused of?
Well, he's accused of essentially bribing organizations and saying that he would do favors for them.
Pay
for play. But obviously the big deal is that these favors are legislative favors that he was doing. Evans knows he's wrong. He's the longest serving member on the council. This is clearly a problem. And right now, it's seeming like Mendelson is sort of going in the direction of a wrist slap. That's, they're saying they're using the term reprimanded, and he needs to be reprimanded, but he is still the head of the Financial Services Committee, which obviously.
Is obviously an issue.
Here's the thing, because even though we are talking about Washington, D.C., the D.C. Council, very, very powerful elected officials, you can hold a job while you are a member of the D.C. Council. The thing that raised questions was that allegedly his chief of staff used the D.C. Council email to solicit business from law firms, lobbying, influence, peddling. If he wanted to use, jackevans@gmail.com and do the same thing, but that there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah, that'd be problematic still.
Given his position.
Because really, the bribes were still about legislative things. Even if it was coming from his private email, but he's making promises that impact the city, it becomes problematic.
Well, like I said earlier, the first crack, I think it was a new crack, and you told me it was the first crack, and you were right. Crack, money. You know, people just lose it when it comes to money sometimes. They lose integrity. They lose sight. They lose what they're supposed to be doing in the first place. And this person has done that. It's interesting that he's just getting a slap on the wrist and the head of the financial.
But let's say it's just starting, because these investigations, particularly with WMATA and the federal grand jury, they're still in process. So we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But he did apologize because it appears that he sees that there was something fishy about what he was doing, to say the least.
So, there you go. Fish.
Oh,
got to get out of here. Misha Green and Dr. Cleo Monago, thank you both so much for coming
in.
You all should see Misha, boy, heading out to an event.
Oh, yes.
That's right, but she won't take her hat off.
Look, y'all know black women who are listening, we got to get ourselves together prior, okay?
Yes, let's do that. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, March 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHORFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good